You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. I'm your host, Raymond Thomas Pronk. Today will be another short show. I also have a meeting that I have to go to at 5, so it'll be a half-hour show. I've been listening to a lot of talk radio. I normally don't have enough time, but I was preparing some material, not only for the show, but for something else. And I just got the message I can stay as long as I want. Unfortunately, I have to be somewhere at about 5:30. I'll go a little longer than the half hour. I'll play it by ear, but I really do need to keep it relatively short. Today, I've been listening to a lot of talk radio. Normally, I don't have time, and I really just sample a few shows, usually early in the morning, and I mean early, 12 to 2 usually in the morning, and 5 to 7 in the morning. But today, I had a little time to listen to Rush Limbaugh, which I haven't really had much time at all to do. But I wanted to get a sense of what are they talking about in talk radio today. And I'm not really surprised what the number one topic is, both on television as well as talk radio. And that is, what will the president say tonight in his address to the nation? And they're playing a game, what he won't say, what he will say, who will he blame? And I guess I said, okay, let me play the game. And turn, what will he definitely not say? Let's kind of go at this a couple of different ways. What will he not say? He won't ask Congress for a declaration of war against the Islamic State. I can almost guarantee he will not do that. It's almost a sure thing. Like 99.99%, President Obama won't ask Congress to declare war. Now, I didn't say I was for a declaration of war or against it, but according to the U.S. Constitution, only Congress can declare war. And ladies and gentlemen, we are in a state of war with the Islamic State. You need to be real clear about that. We've had over 160 airstrikes at last count. Probably by the end of the day, it'll be over 180, both from drones as well as jet fighter aircraft. So we're at war. This is a shooting war, and we're shooting. And we're trying to so-called degrade the Islamic State military capability. Now, some of you are probably for it, some are against it. I'm very much the constitutionalist. And I think the biggest mistake the United States government has made, and let me be more specific, what Congress has made in the last 60 years since World War II, is not assert its constitutional right to declare wars. And as a result, we've had both Democrat and Republican presidents that have dragged the United States into wars. Some have asked for authorization from Congress. Not a declaration of war, but at least got an authorization to use military force, but to take the nation to war. And you can argue there's no real form that a declaration of war takes, but the founders are real clear as to why they vested that power with Congress. And the reason it's not hard to understand, presidents are prone to get the nations into war. It doesn't matter which political party they are. And that has been the history. It's been the sad history. And in many and some instances, the American people have been misled as to what happened. I'm thinking of the Gulf of Tonkin resolution that got us involved in a war in Vietnam, or got us much deeper in. But let's not go there, because that would be a detail. My point is this. Before you put anyone's sons and daughters, men and women, that are serving in the armed forces, no matter what branch of the military service. I think you owe it to them, as well as the American people, to have a free and open discussion of the merits and the demerits of going and taking the nation to war. Now, in some instances, it's very much an open and shut case. Probably the easiest one is the attack on December 7th, 1941 at Pearl Harbor. There, President Roosevelt, and this was the last time we declared war, went to Congress and asked Congress to pass a declaration of war, which it did. Now, there's some actions, I think everyone understands this, they're rather small, and they're pressing. Time is of the essence. The president has to respond, and you don't have time to ask for a declaration of war, but you are going to use military force for whatever reason. But Congress, it's Congress's responsibility to stop doing what it's been doing since World War II. And what I mean by that is giving the president the authority to go to war without a declaration of war by not doing anything. And that's a formula for disaster. And we had it in Libya. Do I need to remind you? President Obama didn't ask for an authorization to do that. And we overthrew Gaddafi. And where are we today? That is a failed state. Our embassy was pulled out. And you have Al-Qaeda-related groups and militias fighting a civil war all over the country. That is an adventure that failed. And that's the problem. The president leading from behind, saying there were no boots on the ground, when that's an obvious lie. There were boots on the ground. There were CIA agents there, and there were special forces there. And there were also French and British special operators there. And the flights, not only by our Air Force, by their Air Forces, sided with the rebels. And what did we get? Was there any real debate? Did Congress give any authorization? Did Congress declare war in that situation? No, it did not. And look at the mess Libya is today. Look at the mess. Now, whether you agree with George Bush's war in Iraq or not, and the more reading I do about it, even though I was on the fence and I gave President Bush the benefit of the doubt, in hindsight, it was a big mistake. Big mistake. And I agree with his Secretary of Defense, not Rumsfeld, Robert Gates, when he said, again in his book, Memoirs, we should have gotten a declaration of war from Congress. And I agree. Now, that doesn't mean you're for or against, but that is what the Constitution spells out. That is the check against a president usurping that authority and taking the nation to war on his own hook or his own authority. And I think that's exactly what he's going to do tonight. There's already preliminary indications that he's made statements, and it's coming out of the White House, that he has the authority. He doesn't need Congress to do anything, which tells me he's definitely not going to ask Congress to declare war on the Islamic State. And I'm not really sure whether he would get a declaration of war even if he asked. And that's probably why he's not going to ask for either a declaration of war or even an authorization. And I know that public opinion has radically swung in really the last 3 weeks as a result of the two beheadings of journalists, where public opinion today, and we're talking polls, roughly 2/3 to 70%, let's say 2 out of 3 today, would favor war with the Islamic State. They definitely would favor drone attacks and air attacks. Fine, but public opinion changes. And the reason why I'm a rather stickler for following what the Constitution says, that only Congress can declare war, is you want public opinion firmly on your side, and you get that by having a national conversation where congressmen have to go back to their districts and hear what the people in their districts are saying. In other words, President Obama should make the case for whatever he's doing, wants to do in Iraq and Syria regarding the Islamic State and fill the American people in. Now, he doesn't have to be specific as to the strategy or the detailed plans, but he must make the case, a convincing case, to commit U.S. military forces, no matter to what extent he wants to get them involved, in attacking the Islamic State. You see, it's only a matter of time before one of our pilots is going to be shot down and captured by the Islamic State and maybe even executed by the Islamic State. It's only a matter of time. I don't wish for that to happen, but in war, it happens. And this group will do that. Their attitude, they're not taking any prisoners. If you are not, do not believe in the Sunni faith, their brand of the Sunni faith, under Sharia law. In other words, if you're a Christian, a Jew, a Shiite, which is another branch of the Islamic religion. In other words, you have a different religious views or no religious views, and they capture you, chances are they're going to kill you. That's why you have a lot more support for military action today in Iraq and Syria. So you're not going to hear the president request from Congress that they declare war. I think that is a rather safe bet, He also is not going to commit what the shorthand phrase of no boots on the ground. He's not going to commit U.S. combat troops, namely Army or Marine forces, to re-enter Iraq. I think he's made that very clear in a number of speeches as well as answers to questions. So those are two things. He won't commit U.S. forces in terms of on the ground. And here's the problem with that. Here's both the problem and I think a solution, and maybe he's pursuing it as I speak. The problem is this. Up until now, the Islamic State has been really fighting more or less a conventional war. They're out in the open. They're going through cities. They're attacking the Iraqi army, their police station, or any Iraqi government institutions. Remember, they're trying to overthrow the governments of both Iraq and Syria. And what they're focusing on, at least for the last 60 days, has been overthrowing the government of Iraq. The problem is, their sworn enemies are the Shia, who dominate the government of Iraq today. The Shia are primarily in Baghdad and south. Sunnis are primarily in the northern part and the western part of Iraq, and that's the part that they control today. Not everything, but most of it. And most of that territory, you need to understand, is desert. You do have towns and cities, but it's sparsely populated, primarily Sunni Muslims. And when they take one of these towns or cities, the first thing they do is kill their enemies, and that's the Shia, any opponents, any tribes that oppose them, they kill them. They take them in prisoners and line them up and shoot them or behead them. That's what they're about, and there are plenty of YouTube videos that they have put on YouTube to document that. And you might say, well, why would they do that? Because it's really, really stoking U.S. public opinion against them. Well, there are two reasons. Think of these videos as recruiting videos. They're trying to get the Sunni population in these areas, such as Anbar province and Mosul, to come over to their side. And they are attracting many young people, teenagers, people in their 20s, to join them. And once they're recruited, they get training in how to become an infantry person or man, a soldier. Because most of these people that they're recruiting, like any new recruit, with some exceptions, don't know how to, for example, fire a rifle or a pistol, don't know tactics, are not necessarily physically fit. So they train them in boot camps in Syria as well as in Iraq. They're building an army, and they know they need to build an army, so they need to recruit people. And how are they recruiting people? One way is showing or publishing these videos on YouTube, and they're successful. Their numbers are estimated somewhere now between 30 and 50,000. Now, the hardcore true believers are probably less than 5,000. So they're quickly expanding their numbers as they've been successful. Now, with the United States air attacks, and it's primarily You need to understand this, and you'll see this in the videos. With the exception of the equipment that they captured from the Syrian army that had our equipment, namely some tanks, some Humvees, some armored personnel carriers, most of their equipment is pickup trucks, Toyota pickup trucks. So the U.S. fighters and drones are taking out Islamic State equipment, but a lot of that is just pickup trucks. Yeah, some of it's Humvees, some of it's tanks, but what they did is take most of that equipment back to Syria. They're based in a town called Raqqa, where they really control. And remember, they initially were allied with al-Nusra, which is an al-Qaeda affiliate, because this group used to be called al-Qaeda in Iraq, and they were defeated during the surge in 2007-2008 that many Democrats opposed the surge, including Barack Obama, including Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. And I mention that because the surge was militarily successful. Because what happened is we changed the generals, we changed the strategy to one of counterinsurgency. Initially, casualties picked up quite a bit, but over time, the population, the Sunni population, became convinced that our military would go after al-Qaeda and protect them. And over time, that's what happened. And the counterinsurgency strategy worked in the sense that al-Qaeda in Iraq was defeated. They were either killed or captured and put in prison. Some of them fled to Syria or hid in Iraq. But now they're back. They're arrested. They've re-equipped themselves, they're armed, and they're dangerous, very dangerous. That's the enemy we face. And we are at today, as I speak, we're at war at them. We're at war with the Islamic State. And that's why, if we're going to pursue this, we need a declaration of war. Now, are we going to see one? No, we're not going to see one. Congress is too timid, too weak, has no backbone. They're not going to assert their constitutional rights under the Constitution. They're not going to declare war. And the president has already indicated that he's not going to ask for authorization just to use force, just like he did in Libya. He didn't ask for authorization from Congress. And if Congress lets him get away with it, then don't complain about Obama. Start calling your congressmen and senators. Ask them, why aren't you declaring war? You know, if you're for war with the Islamic State or the annihilation of the Islamic State, then get on the phone or get on your computer, send emails, and demand Congress to declare war. They're not going to do it because they'll ignore you. But it's worth trying. If you strongly feel that that's the answer, do that. What I'm advocating is that you follow the Constitution, whether you're for or against another war in Iraq. Now, what else is he not going to say? He's not going to tell the American people what the true national interest is in Iraq. And that is a key question that he should be stating. This is something I think he should be stating. Very clearly, what is the national interest of the United States of America in Iraq? I can state it in one sentence. It's not hard to understand, but he won't say it. He'll refer that we have a national interest in Iraq, but he won't say what it is. I'll say what it is. It's oil. Our major oil companies, including ExxonMobil, they're headquartered in Plano here, not too far from where I'm at, as well as Chevron, Royal Dutch Shell, which is another Netherlands-British company, as well as BP or British Petroleum, are just some of the oil companies. Several Chinese oil companies are there. Italian oil company is there. Russia has interest in it. Ladies and gentlemen, the national interest of the United States in Iraq is oil. It always has been and always will be. Because besides oil, there's not much in Iraq that we want or are willing to pay for. It's certainly not tourism, because it's a very dangerous place to visit. Today, people are fleeing Syria and Iraq. You have literally hundreds of thousands, and by now probably millions, of so-called displaced people. People that are fleeing their own countries to go to neighboring countries, whether it's Jordan, Egypt, some even to the United States. They're getting out of Dodge. They're getting out of Iraq, and they're getting out of Syria, if they can. The majority of the population can't, and they're trapped. They're trapped in a civil war both in Syria and Iraq. Now, I'm saying this because before you send your sons and daughters into war, you better have a strategy, and more importantly, you better have an exit strategy. What you need is, how are you going to win the peace? Remember, we've tried this in the first Iraq war, and to the extent that we were winning militarily, that was thrown away when President Obama left Iraq in December of 2011. And the pretext given for doing it is the fact that he demanded that the Iraqi parliament, as well as the former prime minister, sign a status of forces agreement, and they were unwilling to do that. So he said, okay, if you're not going to sign it, we're out of here, and he pulled him out. That sort of took aback the Iraqi government, because they thought they could work something out, namely not have the parliament do it, but do what President Obama's doing, do an executive order type situation. But that's water under the bridge. So any progress that the surge made was thrown away on December of 2011. And what's made matters worse since then is Maliki is a Shiite, and he favored, the government is dominated by Shiite, and they, in simple language, they didn't treat the Sunnis well at all. And I'm glad he's gone, but who knows whether his replacement's going to be any better. The point I'm trying to emphasize, if we engage in military force, which we're already doing, we are taking sides in a brutal civil war. A brutal civil war. And I'm looking at my recording, and I think it's been recording too high. Well, we'll find out. I'm going to bring it down a little. So tonight, you won't hear the president request Congress for a declaration of war. You won't have a clear, precise statement as to what the national interest is in Iraq, and that's oil. And we have a lot of interest because they have a lot of oil. There's a reason why the major oil companies are there. It's mostly in southern Iraq that's predominantly Shia in the Basra area. Now, there is some oil fields near Baghdad and also some oil fields in northern Iraq. But the majority of the oil fields, it's always been in the Basra, southern Iraq area, where the Shia are the majority of the population. And that's the prize. That's the prize. That's the reason. That is our national interest in Iraq. And you have to ask yourself, is the life of your son and daughter worth it? Because in essence, what we're doing is using our armed forces to protect property of our oil companies. There are interests there. That might seem rather cold, but that is the fact. And that's been the reason why the British, the French, and the United States, and other foreign powers have always been interested in the countries of the Middle East, including Iraq, Iran, and Saudi Arabia. It's the oil, folks, and don't let anyone try to distract you from it. You see, what I find very, very interesting in looking at, I don't have a television at home, but I do look at what the networks are putting out and discussing. There's very little mention, even mention of oil, which I'm a little surprised at. It's not hard to get information on this. There's a lot of information publicly available. And what you need to understand is the Iraqi people want to control those oil fields. They want them renationalized, and that's the fight. That has been the fight in Iraq in terms of the parliament there. Because we've been pushing Maliki, and he was unsuccessful, to get the full denationalization of those oil fields. And the Iraqi people want to control it. If you were an Iraqi citizen, you'd want it controlled. It doesn't mean they don't need the assistance of American companies, not only oil field service companies, but the expertise of an ExxonMobil or Chevron or BP, British Petroleum or Royal Dutch. They do. And we have it. And you negotiate contracts and you cut a deal. The problem is what's threatened right now are those contracts, those deals. Because if the Islamic State should take over, and I'm not convinced they will, but if they did, what's the first thing they're going to tear up? Those contracts. The prize is oil. That's what this is all about, and that's not what's being talked about. So there'll be no mention of what the true national interest is of the United States, France, and Great Britain. That's the key coalition, folks, and other countries, Turkey. Turkey gets oil from the Kurds. They have good relationship there. Now, what do I think should happen? And maybe President Obama will say something that I think he should say. Who should be fighting on the ground in Iraq? Should it be U.S. military, either Army or Marine forces? I say absolutely not. I actually agree with Obama that U.S. military forces should not be engaged on the ground. Now, why do I say that? Well, who should do this? Because we do need someone on the ground to take the battle to the Islamic State. Who should it be? It should be Sunni Arabs. Let me say it again, Sunni Arabs. Remember, this is a religious war between Sunni and the Shiites. So we want Arabs to be the troops, and we want that the religion, their religious affiliation, to be Sunni. Now, where can we get these troops? Where are the Sunni Arabs? Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, just to name a few. The Saudi has an air force. They can be doing these missions. We don't need U.S. fighters or drones doing it. The Saudis have a large contingent of several hundred F-15 fighters. They have an army. So does Egypt. I forgot to mention Egypt. Turkey, they're Sunnis. Those should be the ground troops. It should be a coalition. The United States can supply intelligence because we have the satellites, and we do have intelligence capabilities beyond the satellites. But other than that, most of the fighting should be borne by Sunni Arabs, both in the air and on the ground. And this needs to be debated. That's why we need to have this conversation. I'm not automatically for the United States to get involved in this war, because that's exactly what the Islamic State wants. Exactly what they want. They want to have Marines and Army there so they can fight not a conventional war. Because if you think they're going to fight a conventional war, you're sadly mistaken. They're going to fight a guerrilla war and an insurgency war. They're going to pick their fights. And it's going to be a long, drawn-out affair. So I don't want the United States Army, Marines, Air Force, and Navy there at all. Stay out of it. It's really not our fight. And the worst thing we could do is have our sons and daughters be the targets. And what happens? They engage in bombings, roadside bombings. Our troops go out in patrol, and invariably a bomb goes off. People get killed or wounded. And that's what you're going to see a repetition of, exactly what happened in the first Iraqi war. Only worse, because the Islamic State is well-armed, well-funded, rested up, and they're training more and more recruits, and they've been successful. They know the United States is coming. They want the United States to come. And the mistake would be to play their game, to follow their strategy. Their strategy is to, whatever they can do, to draw the United States military back into Iraq and Syria. That's what they want. And we would be foolish to do that, because it's not our civil war. Have Arab Sunnis defeat the Islamic State consisting of primarily Arab Sunnis. Yes, you have upwards of 3,000 Europeans, Australians, Americans that have joined the Islamic State. But if the Sunni Arabs of the nations, some of the nations that I've listed, form a coalition and go after the Islamic State, then you're going to have the population of Iraq and Syria on your side. If we get involved, they won't be on our side. And that is the problem. You don't want U.S. military personnel on the ground there. And I'm trying to be very careful. You're going to need ground forces there. I'm not saying that's most definite. You're going to have that. The question is, where are they from? Who are they? What's their religious background? Because ultimately, it's the Iraqi people that are going to decide who are they going to be for, the Islamic State or this alliance or coalition of Sunni Arabs. And I don't know who's going to win. Predominant military force would be that coalition. But you have a problem. The perception is that the United States, for decades, has been protecting kings, tyrants, dictators in the Middle East. And some of those governments or countries that I've mentioned fall in those categories. So it's not an open and shut case. But if the United States wants to protect its national interests, namely its interest in oil in Iraq, it's time for the Sunni Arabs in the Middle East to stand up and be counted. It's also time for the Shiite government in Iraq to be standing up and be counted. And it's also time for the United States to finally learn the lesson, don't fight other people's civil wars. I'll repeat that. Don't fight other people's civil wars. Stay out. Because while initially you might be perceived as a liberator, it's only a matter of time, and usually less than a year, before you're considered an enemy, an occupier, and they're killing you. So stay out. So I am going to be interested in what the president says. I'm going to be interested in how many people actually tune in, because a lot of Americans have tuned out Barack Obama. They don't trust him. They think he's a failed presidency, both at home in domestic matters as well as in foreign affairs or foreign policy. And we have more than 2 years before his term of office has expired. So it's time for the American people to demand from their representatives in Congress, from their senators, to have a full, fair, and complete debate of what should be done in Iraq and Syria regarding the Islamic State. Should we go to war or should we not go to war? And if we go to war, what is the extent of our involvement in that war? We don't want another example or precedent of a president of the United States exceeding his authority under the United States Constitution by taking our nation to war. It's been done over 50 times without a declaration of war. It's time to stop it. Why? We're broke. Our national debt will be over $18 trillion by the end of the month. We're running massive deficits of over half a trillion. We're broke. And one of the reasons we're broke is fighting the Iraqi war. Yeah, we need oil. Europe needs oil. Turkey needs oil. China needs oil. It's time for the European nations, the Arab nations, Chinese, and Turkey to do their part. Let their sons and daughters die for oil. Let's cut our losses. Let's not repeat the same mistakes over and over and over again. And you can't lead from behind. And unfortunately, we have a president that is really his default position. He doesn't want to be involved in this. He doesn't even want to spend time on this. And the American people perceive it, and that's why his popularity is plummeting, plummeting, plummeting. He ran as a far-left peace candidate, and he won. Do you think he's going to be a war president? I don't think so, because once he tries that, his political base will totally abandon him. They already have problems with them already. So we have a lot to think about, and I will be discussing what the president does say tonight, but I don't think it's going to be very much. I think he's going to reiterate the fact that he doesn't want combat troops, U.S. combat troops in Iraq and Syria. He's going to limit our involvement, and I think he's trying to get a coalition together. I'm not clear about that. I don't know if he's going to be very successful. And he's not going to ask for a declaration of war. He's not even going to ask for authorization to do this. That's the arrogance of power. And that's what the founding fathers were afraid of, that presidents, in their role of commander-in-chief, are the ones most prone to get the country into wars. And that has happened under both Republican and Democratic presidents. And that's what's happening right now. With that, I want to end the show. I'm a little bit longer than I expected. I still have a little time to get to my appointment, so I'll play the closing music. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.